Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. This is the free agency special. We are just a couple hours away from free agency opening up at 4 o'clock. Louis DiBiase joining you here alongside Lars Lewis. And so free agency starts at 4, Lars. The Eagles have already made a bunch of moves. On Monday, they signed Malik Jackson. They brought back DeSean Jackson. Haven't talked to you since then, but
I know.
I'm sure you knew that I was ecstatic, considering I'd been spamming your ears for the past 3 years about a potential reunion. And it finally happened for me and for the Eagles fans and for the offense, and it's going to be great. And we'll talk about the fit, as I did on yesterday's pod and on Monday. If you missed those, you can check them out, LockedOnEagles.com or any podcast platform. Just tell Siri, just tell Alexa to play the Locked On Eagles podcast. You'll hear me, you'll hear Lars, you'll hear Gino Camilleri. But
it's good stuff, people.
Yeah, they've done all these moves, and so it officially opens at 4 o'clock.
Right. So this is mainly the finalization of a lot of things where actual contracts get signed.
Most of it happened yesterday and on Monday. I mean, there was so much movement. I mean, we talk about how good the NBA is with free agency and the trade deadline and stuff. Like, the NFL took a big win there and really, like, won up to the NBA with all the player movement. Odell Beckham's in Cleveland now. Antonio Brown's in Oakland. Le'Veon Bell is a New York Jet. And we'll touch on those later on in the show as well. But, yeah, Monday and Tuesday were banana land. And now,
Anthony Barr went back to the Vikings.
Yeah, Anthony Barr went back. He pulled a Frank Gore on the Eagles and went back to the Vikings instead of the Jets.
And Frank Gore's a Bill.
Yeah, and Frank Gore's a Bill.
This
it's
is
a
crazy.
Wild time. LeSean McCoy's crying inside because DeSean Jackson is where McCoy still wants to be. And
I saw
it's got to be eating him up inside.
I actually saw a clip on Twitter. It was this dude that saw a cat on the other side of the door. And it was like DeSean Jackson looking at LeSean
McCoy.
We're
going to get you out of there.
We're going to get you out of there.
You don't belong in there. Yeah, no, it's awesome. I feel bad for McCoy because I think he's never really detached from the Eagles. But, yeah, all the crazy stuff happened pretty much Monday and Tuesday. And then today's kind of you can officially sign. So Malik Jackson could officially sign with the Eagles today. It was already announced before the 4 o'clock opening.
That's a move.
Because the Jaguars cut him last week, so he could officially sign before free agency.
He can still play.
Great move. So today there could still be some stuff that the Eagles could do, but hopefully when you're listening to this podcast, there's not a 5 more Eagles moves, so then suddenly everything we're about to say is totally useless. But we're going to get this out right before free agency. So on your drive home at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, before all the crazy stuff happens, before maybe the Eagles make another move, you can listen to this while you're making your commute home or to your night shift or whatever.
And, you know, we're also going to keep tabs on Twitter just in case
happens. On Monday, Lars, DeSean Jackson, the trade news broke while me and Gino were recording. So we had a live reaction where I'm giddy, bouncing off the walls like a 10-year-old.
Is that any different?
You could imagine, I'm sure.
No, that was you last week.
It was me.
That's you every day.
That's true.
This is the same guy who gets excited with having a box of Pop-Tarts in the pantry.
Pop-Tarts are a main part of my diet.
Yes, I understand that. That's why you can still fit in your youth-sized DeSean Jackson jersey.
That's true. I was wearing my youth.
You brought
large
it out of
DeSean.
The bag just earlier.
It still fit. As long as I wear a hoodie underneath it, it looks good. I can't wear it just with no
undershirt.
How do
you fit that with a hoodie?
Well, I haven't really got that tall, so, you know, since 20, I think I got it in 2011. I wore it to my first ever Eagles game. But, again, the excitement, I just
wanted to bring that up for the listeners.
Yeah.
He still has a DeSean jersey from when he was 11. It still fits.
It's hard for me to contain my excitement with these kind of moves. And the Eagles are so prone to making these kinds of splashes throughout Howie Roseman's tenure, whether it was the first time around and the moves weren't great, but they were still exciting, the dream team, the redeem team, I guess. And then with Chip Kelly, it was still crazy where he's going out and getting DeMarco Murray and Byron Maxwell and trading LeSean McCoy.
These are effective
additions. Now, yeah, and the Eagles still do it, moving up for Carson Wentz. These moves this past week, the Eagles are always exciting during the offseason. It's always... That's why, to me, I think grown such a love for the offseason almost as much as the regular season because how exciting the Eagles have made it for us. Like, if I was a Green Bay Packers fan, probably wouldn't care as much about free agency and the draft, but Howie Roseman just, and now they're aggressive, exciting moves, but now they're the right moves. So, but you still have that excitement factor.
He kind of started all this.
He really did.
When it came to the trades.
I think he started the trade era, and he traded for DeSean Jackson, and now you see, again, Odell Beckham getting traded, Antonio Brown, all these big names, and I really do think Howie Roseman is part of the start of that era because he tapped into a market, he tapped into a well of talent that you can acquire through trades that other teams just never really thought of doing.
You know, in the NFL, before all of this started, before the trade era began, it was almost like a game of chicken.
Right.
With a lot of teams, like a lot of GMs in front offices, they would be like, they would tease a trade, or the only reason why a trade would happen is if they're trying to get rid of a bad
apple.
And
you'd only get like a seventh round pick for it. You don't,
right.
Like now you're seeing legitimately teams.
There's
like,
actual trade cap.
Right, and the Eagles are willing to give up a third round pick at the deadline to get a Golden Tate. That normally didn't happen. Excited, most exciting Eagles moments when it comes to acquisitions that I can think of. And again, I'm a younger Eagles fan, so forgive me for not making references to the 70s or the 80s, only 21 years old. But from what I can remember as a fan growing up, some of the most exciting moves for me that I, whether they worked out or not, initially when the move happened, how excited I was, a couple I can think of, and the first one is Nnamdi Asamoah to the Eagles, because it was not expected. They had gone out. They already had Asante Samuel, right? But the whole talk in 2011 was, who's going to be that second corner? Because they went through Ellis Hobbs and Dimitri Patterson and Husilio Hansen in 2010.
Yeah.
And, yeah, after they lost Sheldon Brown, they just could not find a counterpart for Asante. And then they trade for Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. They get a second and DRC for Kevin Cobb to Arizona.
I think Asante Samuel was very exciting.
Because
he came off the Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
When, you know, he was playing among
that's
the
a good
best
one
in
too.
The league.
I agree. But, you know, DRC was young, he was fast, he was electric, and you thought, there is your pairing, Asante and DRC.
He came from Oakland, right?
No, Nnamdi did.
That's what I mean, Asamoah.
Yeah. So then you think it's over. Like, the Eagles got their two corners, Husilio Hansen's going to be your slot guy, eventually became Brandon Boykin a year later. And then I remember watching Eagles Live with Dave Spadaro, still the Eagles insider for the team. And I remember him just looking at his phone and suddenly screaming, like, the Eagles got Nnamdi, the Eagles got Nnamdi. And Adam Schefter kept saying there's a mystery team because everyone thought it was between the New York Jets and I can't remember. I think maybe the Raiders were still in on Nnamdi as well. And then suddenly Philadelphia comes out of nowhere and you're like, now we have Nnamdi Asamoah, who at the time it was him and DRC. Nnamdi was incredible. Revis. It was between Nnamdi and Revis.
I was
going to
say, because Revis and Asamoah, that's why the Jets were gunning for him, because
yeah.
They want to have him and
Revis
together.
They were
going to
pair up the two best corners in the game, and Nnamdi was.
That was when Rex Ryan was the coach, actually.
So he didn't pan out in Philadelphia, but at the time when they got him, he was an elite corner. He came into a system that did not fit. They were trying to run press on one side and almost like zone off with Asante on the other, and DRC was in the slot, and Juan Castillo was the defensive coordinator, and he was really an offensive line coach, which he is now for Buffalo. The dream team was a wild time, but that Nnamdi move was so exciting because we all know corner has been such a thorn in the side of the Eagles defense when they've been trying to rebuild. Now they have a lot of young pieces, which we'll talk about in a little bit with Darby being a free agent. But
right.
I remember at the time Nnamdi was exciting. I can think of Alshon in 2017. Because, again, that was another move I didn't expect. I was really all in on Deshaun coming back in 2017. And you saw names like Kenny Britt get thrown out there, Pierre Garçon, Torrey Smith, who did join the Eagles. And then, much like Nnamdi, like Alshon, boom, one-year deal, prove-it deal. And then he blows up in 2017, has an incredible playoff. They extend him to a four-year contract. And there's your wide receiver one that they had to find because DGB, who's now in prison, was the number one.
I think a rather underrated acquisition that maybe flew under the radar, but I think was extremely important,
mm-hmm.
was Jason Peters.
True.
I think offensive lineman is not a sexy position,
right?
But him coming off Bills, as well as he played the last 2 years he was in Buffalo, and Philadelphia needed linemen in the worst
way. That's definitely one of the best signings. Wasn't one of the most exciting, though.
Right. Like I said,
it wasn't sexy.
But in terms of success, he was probably one of the best acquisitions the team has had the last 20 years.
And much like a Malik Jackson move, which is kind of going under the radar because of Deshaun. But the Deshaun reunion, that's another one where I haven't seen Eagles fans this excited about a acquisition. And it could have been in the draft, it could be in free agency through trades. Haven't seen the Eagles fans, the fan base, this excited about a move really since they traded up to pick two for Carson Wentz.
I'd say so. Because it's been in the making for how many years?
Yeah.
You know, ever since he left Washington, he's been toiling in Tampa.
It's
Eagles
been,
fans are like, please come home.
Yeah, it's been 3 years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
And But, yeah, Wentz, by the way.
Also, they don't want Deshaun continuing to torch the Eagles every year.
Yeah, he was the ultimate Eagle killer. He has more 50-yard receptions against the Eagles than anybody.
Ugh, I still remember that game against Tampa he's the best, last year.
He's the best deep
Fitz
threat.
Throwing bombs all over the place.
He's the best deep threat in Eagles history, and he's also the deep threat that the Eagles could never guard.
Is it true that he is actually the number one wide receiver in terms of speed after the catch?
Yeah, you want to hear an interesting stat?
I saw that stat.
At 32 years old, Jackson is still among the fastest players in the NFL. He's reached 20 miles an hour on 8 of 52 touches in 2018. That's 15% of his touches, the highest rate in the NFL. I said
higher than anybody else in the league.
Yeah, on yesterday's podcast, Lars, I said that if he ran the 40-yard dash in Indy with Paris Campbell, Mecole Hardman, all those guys,
he's right there
a couple
with
weeks
him.
Ago, he probably would have ran. I think he would have beat Paris Campbell, who was clocked in at a 4.31. I think Deshaun would still be right there. So another move that, and he's the one that made me think of this topic about most exciting acquisitions in recent Eagles history because, and it's not about how it pans out, like Rodney McLeod was one of the better signings. Brandon Brooks, one of the best signings the Eagles have ever made, but it's a guard. It didn't have the excitement factor.
Just like Jason Peters, it's not sexy, but it's effective.
Nnamdi, I can think of, Deshaun, Alshon Jeffrey. It's really skill position, guys. And then the trade-up for Carson Wentz was instantly because you really knew, and it wasn't just more so they're going to get Goff or Wentz, but it was also, thank God, this spells the end of Sam Bradford as the quote-unquote guy that Chip Kelly was trying to sell us on. So, yeah, just a couple. And if you have any other exciting acquisitions that I'm missing, drop us a line at LockedOnBirds, at DBSCLOE, or at LarsLewis12. But real quick, before we take a break here on the free agency special on Locked On Eagles, want to get a grade from you, Lars, from the Eagles' start to free agency. They bring back Brandon Graham on a very team-friendly deal, seemingly now considering what Trey Flowers got.
And they also restructured Peters' contract.
Yeah, they brought back JP for another year. They bring back Isaac Seumalo on a three-year extension. Jason Kelsey gets paid. Malik Jackson coming in, the best defensive tackle Fletcher Cox has ever played next to. Deshaun Jackson. They let Wiz walk. They let Jernigan walk. We'll see what they do with, you know, Golden Tate's done now, and Jay Ajayi.
They let Hicks walk.
Yeah, Hicks is gone. Darby, we'll still see what they do with that. I'm giving them an A. I think it's been, first off, you kept your entire offensive line intact, which was one of your best units down the stretch last year, with JP, with Seumalo, with Kelsey. Hopefully Brooks comes back fully healthy off that torn Achilles.
Ugh, that was tough.
Brandon Graham, you now solidify at least your starting defensive end position for three more years with Graham and Derek Barnett. You can now go out and draft, hopefully, your fourth guy, your developmental guy, with Chris Long as your third, and you hope Josh Sweat can develop. But this gives them, all these moves give them so much optionality in the draft now, because there's not a single glaring need outside of maybe running back that they have to address now. Now you can be like, yeah, we're going to need a safety in a couple years, or yeah, we might need a left tackle to compete with Jordan Mailata in a year or two, depending on when JP decides to hang it up. So all these moves to me were great. Defensive tackle, that was their biggest need probably when Jernigan, they decided to decline the player option. And Malik Jackson, Lars, just here's a stat from Malik Jackson. 121 regular season and postseason games since 2012. He's played 106 consecutive regular season games. This is not someone like Jernigan that's going to have health issues. Ninth among NFL defensive tackles in sacks, 23, and tackles for loss, 36 of them, since 2015.
Well, he's been a central focal point.
He should have won Super Bowl MVP with the Broncos that year against the Panthers.
Yeah, the only reason why he did it was because of the strip sack by Von Miller.
Right. And then
which
you saw the
essentially
massive,
swung the game.
Yeah, and then he got a Fletcher Cox-like deal in Jacksonville. I mean, you have Cox and Jackson. I don't know, Lars, like Malik Jackson and Fletcher Cox versus Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh last year with the Rams. What's a better pairing? I almost think Jackson and Fletcher Cox might be, I mean, just as good, if not better.
I think Fletcher Cox is in the top three when it comes to overall down linemen in the league,
and I think
along
Jackson's,
with Aaron Donald.
And I think Jackson's one of the best pass-rushing interior defensive linemen,
I think he's
too.
I think Malik Jackson's a top 10 player
when
it comes to defensive
tackles,
line.
Yeah.
Malik Jackson has been a focal point for both Jacksonville and Denver throughout his career. There's a reason why that he is as heralded as he is when it comes to his prowess with pass rush. And I feel like with Philadelphia, the pass rush was kind of suffering when you look towards the second half of the season outside of Fletcher Cox.
Well, I thought it got better down the stretch. I think you're – no, I know what you're saying. It was struggling – it really was until Jernigan got healthy down the stretch.
I think
then the defense
up until
took
then, then they started playing much better heading into the playoffs. I'm saying from like weeks from 8 to about like 14, like 14 or 15, it struggled.
It did. No, you're not wrong. In the secondary, had so many injuries, and now you have. I mean, your front four now is going to be Brandon Graham, Malik Jackson, Fletcher Cox, and Derek Barnett.
Yeah, when you looked at the end, when you looked at the end of last year in the playoff games,
Cox was unstoppable.
Granted, Graham was an animal.
Michael Bennett too. You couldn't stop those guys. Speaking of,
and Malik Jackson now fills Bennett's role,
and you pay him for less at $10 million a year, and he's 4 years younger. So yeah, big move bringing in Malik Jackson. We haven't talked about it a lot because of Deshaun. But the move was probably going to be one of the better ones in the league this year to pair him with Fletcher Cox. Because, again, Mike Mayock said it at the Combine, the Raiders now GM. Quarterbacks hate pressure up the middle because it disrupts their footwork. They can't step up in the pocket. They got to flush outside. To me, I would much rather have guys collapsing from the outsides. Defensive tackles that are elite are so valuable.
I want to give you an example regarding that with what Mayock said. You remember the 2015 AFC title game when New England played Denver?
Yep.
And you looked at Malik Jackson in that game,
mm-hmm.
and you looked at Von Miller, you looked at Shane Ray, you looked at that front four that Denver had, and they made Brady's life miserable.
Was that DeMarcus Ware, too, or was that Sean Phillips? It was one of they always had.
I think it was DeMarcus Ware.
They always had
Ware
one of those
well.
Savvy vets on the other side, too, that were just
like
contributing.
That defense that Denver had was frightening.
Yeah.
It was that good. And I think I look at Philadelphia's front four.
Looks just as good.
I'd say, okay, maybe not that caliber.
I don't know.
But I think they're up there.
Efficiency-wise,
okay,
this is.
If I had to give it a scale, I think that front four that Denver had might be among the best in NFL history. And I would put this front four right now as the best in the league right now. I don't think it's up there because as great as Fletcher Cox is, Von Miller's a generational player. Like, he is probably the best defensive end in the league today. Maybe the best since maybe Reggie White.
Yeah, and I think Malik Jackson still has it. Just 2 years ago, he had 8 sacks.
Oh, yeah.
So, and at a defensive tackle, if you can get 8 sacks out of a guy like that with Fletcher Cox, who finally surpassed 10 last year, here is Cody Rourke. He is the Lockdown Broncos host. Really wanted to get his take on Malik Jackson because Jackson, I mean, he had some great years in Jacksonville over that 2016 to 2018 span and helped them get to the AFC title game 2 years ago. But in Denver was really when Malik Jackson was at his peak. So I talked to Cody, asked him what the Eagles are getting in Malik Jackson, and here's what he had to say.
This is Cody Rourke, host of Lockdown Broncos. I want to take a couple of seconds here to tell you guys about one of your newest acquisitions on the defensive line for the Eagles in 2019. Malik Jackson signing a 3-year deal with the Eagles. That's huge news for the Eagles if they want their defense to improve on the defensive line. Now, Malik Jackson, he brings experience winning a Super Bowl ring with Denver. He was very, very monumental in Denver, being dominant in the postseason defensively. He opened up a lot of things for Von Miller to have success in that offseason. He will command some double teams. He's very physical at the line of a scrimmage in terms of the point of attack, getting his hands inside the base of the offensive lineman, pushing him back, driving him back. He's a definite sizable guy that I think will improve the Eagles defense in 2019. In a division where you're going up against the Cowboys and Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, he was very demonstrative in that win that the Broncos had against the Cowboys a couple years ago back in 2017, stopping the run, holding Ezekiel Elliott to limited yards, I believe under 20 total yards. Altogether, he was very monumental in that. So the Eagles are getting a guy with experience, size, strength that will improve the consistency of their defensive line. Coming to the Eagles on a very friendly 3-year deal, $30 million, not bad considering he was just paid over $90 million the previous years to sign with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Eagles fans, enjoy him. He's going to be a good addition for you in 2019.
All right, we appreciate that from Cody Rourke. Again, he is the host of Locked On Broncos. Another thing, too, personality-wise, that's just another great character, a great leader in the locker room.
Almost like what DeMarcus Ware was in Denver.
Yeah, and he's younger, and you know, he talked about his power and his hand placement, his just pure technique and pass rush ability. He's not one of the top run-stopping defensive tackles, but he is going to be one hell of an addition for the price, like Cody said. Last thing, just while I was listening to that, I'm just thinking about all the talent on paper the Eagles have in 2019, Lars, on offense and defense. It's hard to say that they're more talented on paper than the 2017 Super Bowl team and that 2018 team that while they went 9-7, they nearly made the NFC title game. I think when we hit the summer after this whole free agency period passes the draft, this might be the most talented weapons-wise. It's already the best the Eagles right. have ever had. And then on defense, too, if they can add another young pass rusher in the draft, maybe a linebacker and a third safety, with the corner potential they finally have and all the elite players in their prime they already have on both sides of the line, 2019, man, they're going to – like the Eagles should be – Colin Cowherd actually picked them to be the top top team in the NFC next year, and he's one of the more heavier critics of Philadelphia. I'm getting excited looking at this team on paper again. They're always a good team on paper, it seems, with these offseason acquisitions. But, man, 2019, like, it's going to be hard for Carson Wentz not to be an MVP candidate.
I'd say so. If I had to give a final grade, I know you gave yours.
Yeah.
I give it a B+, and I would say...
And I think there's more to come.
For only one caveat, I think, is the running back position is still a mystery.
And we're going to get into that next. So mm-hmm. That's a good tease. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast free agency special. All right, everybody, welcome back to Locked On Eagles, this free agency special of the show. You can always check out our previous podcast, LockedOnEagles.com, or any podcast platform that you are subscribed to the show. We appreciate everyone subscribing, leaving us
Or just see our Twitter timelines. You'll see them always like retweeted, so if you can't find it online.
There. Yeah, you'll when we get them, we're churning them out 4 to 5 days a week for you.
Because a lot of people are going to be on Twitter in about 45 minutes from when we're doing this now.
So
4 o'clock
minutes.
Is free agency.
So we're going to have this pod out just in time for free agency so you can really understand what's about to happen. And I don't think you're suddenly going to see at 4 o'clock, like, the Eagles signed this guy, because, like, there's been things leaked for 3 days now that it's not suddenly at 4 o'clock you're going to get all this news. Not like the trade deadline where, yeah, the deadline's at 4, but the processing and everything, you'll hear more.
It's going to be stretched out a little bit.
You're still going to – you're probably not going to hear a whole lot of stuff smack dab at 4 o'clock, but we're also going to make sure me and Lars have Twitter open right now. We're going to keep checking on it as we dive in to see if the Eagles make any moves. But for right now, it looks like they're still quiet, maybe a little too quiet, Lars. And again, you mentioned it. They got $12 million in salary cap space, by the way. I think having a high payroll is good when you have good talent like they do, and the fact that they still have $12 million in open cap space.
Especially when Wentz is still on a rookie contract.
Yeah, absolutely, and they're going to still max that out for another year, maybe two still with Wentz on that rookie deal, but they still have room to make some deals, and the position now that they have to address, they got their speed receiver, they got their defensive tackle next to Cox, they maintained Jason Peters at left tackle, right? They shored up the entire offensive line. The move they need to make now, even linebacker and safety, it is not as dire now as a running back. They have to, like, you're not going into the season again with Josh Adams, Corey Clement, and Darren Sproles. It's just, and I know you're a Notre Dame guy, Lars, and I think Josh Adams is going to make the roster. He showed some good things as an undrafted rookie.
My brand is on life support.
No, I think for what he was, he led the team in rushing, and
it's
was
just something
efficient.
Happened where he just, all of a sudden, the holes just weren't there anymore.
I think he hit a wall, and I think he was trying to do too much, and I still think he could develop into a solid rotational guy in this offense.
And that's all I expect. Yeah. Just give me someone who could go in there and get about 5 or 7 carries a game, and I think he would be ideal for goal line situations because he's a power running back. I mean, at one point, he was averaging 6 yards a carry.
Yeah, he was extremely efficient, but they still, like, they're going to have to add.
Oh, yes, and I think the draft is going to be the most important aspect of acquiring a running back because it's a rather heavy draft.
The draft is where they're going to add their RB1, potentially, of a committee or of a guy that's going to get the majority of the work. Regardless, I think the potential to get that guy that is the clear lead guy, even in a committee, Jay Ajayi was clearly the guy 2 years ago in that rotation. The draft is going to be where they find that guy, but there is still plenty of talent, even with Le'Veon Bell going to New York, Lars, there is still plenty of talent out there for a solid number 2, number 3 next to Corey Clement. Some names to consider, Tevin Coleman still out there, Duke Johnson on the trade block, TJ Yeldon, Spencer Ware, Jordan Howard, LeGarrette Blount still there. There's some sleeper guys like Jalen Richard. There's some other trade candidates, maybe. Who knows?
I know a couple hours ago, Mark Ingram signed with the Ravens.
Right, Mark Ingram. And he only got, Lars, 3 years, $5 million each. 3 years, $15 million. That, to me, especially with Le'Veon's deal, not being what everyone else
it might have been
it
because he got popped for PEDs last year.
Yeah, maybe, but I think at the same time you also see Le'Veon's deal. I think it's encouraging for people that want Tevin Coleman but are shaky and hesitant to pay him maybe $8-plus million. I don't think Tevin Coleman's getting more than $7 million. And to rank the running backs available still, I'd go Tevin Coleman 1. I think you could get him at $7 million, and in this Philadelphia offense, he would be perfect. Having, like, you talk about how, like, last year, Lars, wouldn't you agree speed was a liability? It was lacking on the offensive side.
They especially when Sproles wasn't out there.
They had everything but speed. And then you bring in, you had Nelson Agholor. Now you bring in DeSean Jackson, the fastest receiver I've ever seen. And then Tevin Coleman at running back, a guy that just a couple years ago in Kyle Shanahan's offense was averaging 13 yards a reception. I mean, that's a guy that I would love in Doug Peterson's offense. I think he's number one. Number two, Duke Johnson. I think with Cleveland now,
you've been really heavy on Duke the last couple of weeks.
And they just brought in Odell Beckham, another receiver. I think Duke Johnson, like, he'd be, what, the sixth option now in that offense in Cleveland?
Got Nick Chubb there.
And what's it going to take now, a six-round pick? And he's only making, he signed a contract extension last year with Cleveland that's very similar to Mark Ingram's deal. He's not even making that much. I think his cap hit this year is, it's not more than $5 million. So I think, and again, much like Tevin Coleman, he fits perfectly. Number three, TJ Yeldon. I'm really starting to buy into that idea. If Coleman prices himself out, if a team is willing to make him a really sizable offer, I think TJ Yeldon at like $4, $5 million, he's one of the better third down backs in the league. He was way more efficient in Jacksonville than Leonard Fournette was last year.
I like to think that Duke Johnson could be the best option.
Really? You think he's top over Tevin? Out of those top three,
I'd say in terms of one, money.
Yeah.
And two, you have more flexibility because he's not going to cost as much. If you sign Tevin to a deal, he's going to cost, what, $7 million?
Yeah, but they're both only 25. I mean, Duke's
I think
cheaper.
Duke can come a little bit cheaper, and you're going to give up, what, a sixth-round pick, seventh-round pick?
Yeah, I think either one would be perfect. And Yeldon, too. Yeldon's interesting because he has the size. He, you know, height and weight-wise, he really matches up with what Jay Ajayi is. So he's not some scat back like Darren Sproles. Like, TJ Yeldon has great receiving ability, really important on third down situations for the Jaguars last year. Great hands, again, elusive, can make cuts.
He's a beat. You know what he is? Boy. He's a BBB.
Yeah, on third and two, he can get you those 2 yards.
He's like, he's a big Bama back.
Yeah, he is. But he's got the receiving ability that Philadelphia could really use. You got Yeldon and Clement to complement a rookie. All in on that idea. Give me Josh Jacobs, TJ Yeldon, and Corey Clement. Inject that into my veins. I would rank, and I want to get your rankings too.
Roll Tide.
TJ Yeldon, 3.
Roll Tide.
I would say Jordan Howard, 4. I do like the idea. I think it makes a lot of sense. Adam Schefter even linked it. I think Howard would be a good power back.
He's a bruiser.
He would be the LeGarrette Blount to your next Corey Clement or to your next Jay Ajayi. I think Jordan Howard would really fit. And last year, only averaged 3.7 yards per carry, but had 1,000 yards, 1,300 yards, I think his first year, had over 1,100 yards 2 years ago. And then last year, nearly had 1,000 yards, even though they went a lot of the time to Tariq Cohen. So Jordan Howard, 4. Then I would say it's a toss-up at 5. I'll put Spencer Ware there just because of the familiarity. He's a good pass blocker. He's familiar with Doug Peterson. And then I'd say LeGarrette, 6. I think LeGarrette Blount's the last option that if you really don't want to spend any money. And he's still a guy that can, in the red zone, get you 8, 9,
he played
10
a big role
in
winning the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. And last year he took a dip in Detroit, was only really used in short yardage situations.
Whole team took a dip.
Yeah, so I think Blount still maybe has some left in the tank, but I like the other 5 options first. So give me your top 5. I went Coleman, Duke Johnson, TJ Yeldon, Jordan Howard, and then Spencer Ware. And then LeGarrette Blount's that last guy on the out.
I'm going to say Duke Johnson 1.
I like that. I don't disagree fully. I think it's almost 1A, 1B with Tevin and Duke.
I put Duke 1, as I mentioned before, the price. And if you trade for a guy, you still got a guy who's under contract. He's not going to cost very much. And I think Duke Johnson shares the same capabilities as Tevin Coleman, except the difference is Tevin Coleman's been on a, you know, shall we say, in terms of reputation, a much better offense.
Yeah.
When he's had Matt Ryan for the last couple years, and he's had Devontae Freeman as well as his running mate. I really like Duke Johnson's game. I feel like he's been under the radar in Cleveland for a long time, And the reason why he hasn't taken the full reins was because, well, he's not that, you know, he's not an elite runner, but he is so good catching the ball in the backfield.
Well, and I think he's a better runner than maybe people even give him credit for. He averaged 5 yards a carry last year. This is a guy that
I think as a full-time running back.
No, he's not going to be that. But I actually think though he is a guy you can. It's not like Darren Sproles where you kind of know that they're going to throw the football when he's on the field. I think Duke Johnson's, he's 5'9", but 210 pounds. He's a guy that can carry the ball. And he's a different guy. I mean, 61 receptions in 2015, 53 in 2016, then 74 and 47.
And look what he was crazy. Working with.
And he's a guy, he's not like Sproles where this is a player that can line up in the slot. And I saw him catching contested balls. Like he is a different type of receiving running back.
He's a Swiss Army knife, man.
Yeah,
he can do it all.
So who's Tevin Coleman 2?
I'd put Tevin at 2 because obviously he's been a, you know, really good fantasy option for the last like 3 or 4 years.
Great PPR leagues.
Yeah, he's great out of the backfield. He can run. I think Duke might be a better runner than him.
Who's 3?
3?
Yeldon or Howard?
I don't know.
Here's some stats from Yeldon.
I would say TJ Yeldon.
Yeldon
because
has
85
receptions the past
2 years. I think TJ Yeldon will cost less. He'll cost less and could give you similar production. They're both rather similarly styled runners. They're power.
2018, he had 55 catches.
He's got some better hands than Jordan Howard does.
55 catches, 487 yards, and 4 touchdowns through the air for TJ Yeldon. 6'2", how much does he weigh? He's got to be over 200 pounds. Yep. He's a big guy.
So
he's
I put TJ Yeldon there, put Jordan Howard then at 4.
Yeah, so we're almost in agreement.
Actually put Blunt at 5 and Ware at 6 for I like LeGarrette Blunt. It's just more of a personal preference than anything. When he was on Philly in 2017, that was just so much fun.
One of our consistent listeners, Lawrence, shout out. He tweets in a lot. And great conversations back and forth. I don't know if he asked me how do you like a duo of Jordan Howard and Spencer Ware, and I said ew, no. To me, I'm okay with one of these guys, but again, this is not. None of these guys are going to be your lead if they're going with just one of these.
It's
players,
a committee,
and then they're ignoring running back in the draft. You're just trying to get by again. Like I don't want Spencer Ware, Corey Clement, and Darren Sproles next year.
No,
one of these guys to me needs to be that complement to Clement. And again, a rookie. Like,
it doesn't necessarily improve your run game.
And they don't have to draft a running back in the first or second round. If they add Tevin Coleman, they can get Bruce Anderson in the 5th round or Justice Hill. Like, I'm fine with that, but they have to address one that has a lot of upside, and they need to nail the pick. They cannot pick another Donnell Pumphrey or a Wendell Smallwood, because while they've done a good job finding Corey Clement and Josh Adams, you can't bank on doing that every single year in the undrafted pool of rookies. So that's my take on running back. Real quick, before we take another break here, Lars, safety and linebacker, I'm not into any of these safeties right now. They are getting big contracts. The Eagles have their starting 2 safeties for next year. I think more so getting a young guy makes sense because eventually you need to replace Rodney McLeod and Malcolm Jenkins. I don't see the need to bring in a veteran. I think Trey Sullivan as that third safety with a rookie.
You're not willing to go down the Corey Graham route again?
No, I can't do that for another year. I think it's more important than linebacker, but because linebacker, you saw Jordan Hicks, the deal he got.
And there's also position flexibility that Philadelphia already has.
Right, and they don't even really use linebackers that much. Nigel Bradham's on the field almost 100% of the time, but they don't even run 2 linebackers a whole lot. They're running a lot of times 3 safeties and 3 corners. So
I'll never forget the picket fence defense.
Yeah, I wasn't going to pay Jordan Hicks the money Arizona gave him. I think Camus was great in coverage last year. You could add a guy like LJ Fort, or the Redskins just for some reason released Zach Brown, who PFF had him highly graded in coverage last year. He had an 84.4 coverage grade. Zach Brown, like, let's see if we can bring him in. I'm not worried about really linebacker safety right now. I think both you could address in the draft. Both, again, are future needs. So I think both safety and linebacker, I don't think you should expect huge moves for that as they let Jordan Hicks walk. And he got paid.
And
look, Jordan Hicks, still great in coverage. That's really why he got the deal. But it's a shame seeing the injuries kind of take his impactful plays off the field. He was almost at a Hall of Fame level pace with like turnover level plays his first couple years. And then the past couple years of him playing, the most recent ones, the past few seasons, he hasn't been getting any interceptions or forced fumbles or fumble recoveries. So I think, you know, good luck to Jordan Hicks, a great guy, great player, great pick in the third round, surprisingly, for Chip Kelly out of Texas. But at the same time, like, this is not a very important position for the Eagles defense right now. We're kind of moving away from the traditional linebackers. You see teams like the Chargers now use safeties as linebackers. Real quick, so last thing, don't do another veteran defensive end. I think bring Chris Long. Like, the only way I would bring back or bring in a Vinnie Curry, someone actually even asked, we're going to get to our mailbag next segment. Someone asked about Vinnie Curry, and I'm okay with that if Chris Long is gone. But at $5.6 million, 6.5 sacks last year, I think Chris Long, he even said on the Dan Patrick Show that he wants to come back to Philadelphia. Have him as your third guy, but it makes no sense to have that fourth guy be a veteran pass rusher. You already have proven guys in Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, and Chris Long. You need another guy to potentially be the future with Derek Barnett, and hopefully Josh Sweat pans out, where that fourth guy to me should be a defensive end you draft in the second round, like a Charles Omenihu, or in the fourth round, a Joe Jackson from the U. You know, that's what you got to do here in the fourth. You need youth. You need that young guy that can be part of the rotation. So if anyone was wondering about defensive end, I think you should expect the Eagles more so to address that position in the draft. Let's take a break here on the Locked On Eagles free agency special. One more segment to go. We got our mailbag, and I got to tell you why. I hear rumors about Darby coming back. Not into it, Lars. That's coming up next right here on Locked On Eagles. Welcome back, everybody, to this Locked On Eagles free agency special. I am Louis DiBiase alongside one of my co-hosts, Lars Lewis. We are getting into free agency, which now starts in 20 minutes. Before we get to our mailbag, we had a lot of people bringing in the questions about free agency coming up. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into the mailbag. But one thing we didn't address, we talked about running back, safety, linebacker, all the Eagles' most exciting moves. I think it's been an exciting podcast. Hope you have enjoyed it. I've really had fun going through all this stuff. Again, speculation season is one of my absolute favorites in all of sports.
You are a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, March Madness, forget it. NFL free agency, that's what I'm into. That's what I'm into.
Yeah, because you have a team that is wholeheartedly active every year.
Oh, absolutely. The Eagles make it exciting this time of year. But one thing I would not be excited about, Lars, is bringing back Ronald Darby. And you know that I'm not very fond of this idea. I let it be known. I got into like a two-hour debate with a couple guys. I was surprised that there were a lot of Eagles fans okay with the idea of bringing Ronald Darby back, considering what they saw from those young corners down the stretch last year. And apparently the Eagles are interested. They want him back. That's what Darby told Ian Rappaport. I don't know maybe if that was for leverage or the Eagles are really into bringing him back. But Lars, I'm scratching my head.
They are not part of Sewell brand.
Howie Roseman, that's right. Howie Roseman really, I mean, at the combine, he said he wants to give those young guys at corner a chance to develop. He took Sidney Jones in the second round. He took Rasul Douglas in the third round. He took Avante Maddox in the fourth round.
Has Cravion LeBlanc.
Cravion LeBlanc, 83.1 coverage grade against the Bears in the playoffs, 84.4 against the Saints. He was the highest graded. He had three pass breakups in the playoffs and an interception. The highest graded corner the first 2 weeks of the playoffs, and you got him off the streets with Jalen Mills coming back too. That's five corners not named Ronald Darby that are on rookie contracts that have shown a lot of promise, as much promise as Ronald Darby, and you put legitimate assets into them. I don't understand what bringing Darby back would mean.
Now, we don't know exactly how much interest Roseman is showing right now. We don't know that.
I wouldn't bring him back at all, even for a team-friendly deal. Like, I know he's young. He's got really good speed. That is why I think he's going to get overpaid in the market still, even though it's Wednesday and we still haven't heard anything about Darby. It's kind of quiet on the Darby front.
We might know by today.
But he's coming off two. I mean, people are coming after me about Sidney Jones and how he's injury-prone. Ronald Darby's coming off two serious leg injuries in back-to-back seasons, and this is not a guy that's physical like Rasul Douglas. He's not a great tackler. He relies on speed. He's coming off two serious leg injuries, and again, like, even if you're not into these five corners that you have, if you're maybe only into two of them, it still, to me, is not worth the money Ronald Darby's going to get. You got to separate the young corners and Darby for a minute. Is Darby, even without those guys, worth the money that you're going to overpay for.
Yeah, like how much better is he compared to the guys you got right now?
I don't think he is, and they have the replacements when it comes to speed. I think Cravion can run with anybody. I think Sidney Jones, when he's healthy, and Avante Maddox.
And Rasul Douglas.
And then you have the physical guys like Rasul and Jalen Mills that are way better tacklers.
And the best part is there's a couple guys there that have experience playing safety as well.
Yeah, so even if you were to move Avante Maddox to safety, you still have four of those guys. Even if Mills is gone, there's still three.
Okay, let me ask you this question.
There's so much depth without Darby.
All right, before we get to our mailbag, I want to ask you this question. Let's say that Roseman offers a one-year deal.
It's time to see.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
I saw enough last
year. I figured
year
I'd ask.
When it was Douglas, when it was LeBlanc, and it was Maddox. And the secondary looked better than it ever did last year. Darby and Mills were a liability last year, the first half of the season. So we can't even pretend like Darby, he has been shaky. He's been on and off extremely since he was traded to Philadelphia in 2017. I saw more from Douglas and LeBlanc and Maddox on big stages, and I saw something from Sidney Jones those first seven games in the slot. He was really quiet because he was locking everybody down. I saw enough on huge stages that I'm like, Darby hasn't shown me, he's shown me maybe a little bit more in 4 years. He had that great rookie season in Buffalo. The second year, not really that good. I have seen enough to know what Darby is to me, that I've invested picks in these guys and I've seen the production. I'm not going to just put those guys in because we took Sidney Jones in the second round, but I'm seeing the flashes of potential, and we need to see if those guys can make that a consistent pattern. And I saw them make that a consistent pattern down the stretch. Lars, the Saints were avoiding Rasul Douglas with Michael Thomas. They didn't want Michael Thomas being covered by Rasul Douglas. How wild is that from the start of the first Saints game where Rasul Douglas is getting toasted by Michael Thomas? You saw extreme amounts of growth from those guys. And it was high-quality plays, pass breakups by Maddox, and tackles for a loss by Rasul Douglas on the outside. To me, Darby doesn't make sense for the money. He doesn't make sense because of the depth, because of what you invested in these young guys, and because of simply his production. Again, he was, even for his speed, was getting beat deep a lot last year. I may be a little bit too hard on Darby, but I'm a big fan, and everybody knows that's listened to this podcast knows that I believe in the other corners on this team. And even if three of them, like you're banking on, you paying Darby is basically you saying you think at least three of them are not going to pan out. Like, I think it's pretty hard to bet against the majority of those five, right? There's going to be at least, three of them that consistently play like they did the past couple of years. Don't you agree? I mean, it's not like we're just saying don't sign Darby because we have two guys. Like, we have five of them that showed potential. And Jalen Mills, even, I am counting in that list. Jalen Mills was their best corner in the playoffs in 2017. So I'm not a fan of it. And if they,
although I think personally he fits better as a safety.
Yeah, and whatever. Like, to me, I thought he was better in the playoffs than Darby was at corner. So
right. Just the long and short of it is that there's better options on this team.
It just doesn't make any
for
sense.
The money compared to paying $9 million for Ronald Darby.
Right. Is he $10 million better than Avante Maddox?
No, he's not.
Or Cravion or Sidney Jones. Like, no, it's not. It wouldn't make.
And also, let's take this into account. You know what plays a big role in this? Malik Jackson, actually. Because now you have a front four that can now get even more pressure towards
the
quarterback.
Secondary.
It puts less heat on the secondary.
That's a really good point. And you saw the pass rush get better down the stretch last year. You saw the secondary get better as a result.
Yeah, so you don't have to pay top dollar for a corner because you have a pass rush now
that's
capable of getting to the quarterback quicker and allowing basically having the quarterback make rather poor decisions, and that actually puts less pressure on the secondary.
And it doesn't mean that they're not going to be interested in Darby. They probably very well are. I just think it's a really bad decision.
Yeah,
I think it's a team that's made...
It'd be a waste of money.
I think it's a team that's made a lot of good moves. I think they're choosing the right people to move on from, and I think Darby needs to be on that list. Because, again, I know Roby only got 1 year, $10 million with Houston. I think Darby's going to get $10 million.
Right.
He's only, 26 years old?
He's going to go somewhere where they desperately need a corner and they don't have a great front four.
With that...
Let's start our mailbag.
Let's do it.
So we've got some questions, and let's start off with Jim Mac. Pardon me if I butcher this, McElatin.
We got some European Eagles fans across
Jim,
the pond. We love all your contributions, guys.
Jim McElatin asks Louis, if Carson goes down this year, we won't have, and we don't have Foles, should we get another decent backup quarterback?
I think that's another move to keep an eye out for that we didn't talk about.
And I have a guy.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Fitzmagic.
Like, he doesn't have the magic.
Him and DeSean Jackson, man.
Yeah,
they were a thing last year.
He's a free agent. He, like Nick Foles, as a spot starter, could randomly be leading the league in passing like Fitz was the first couple weeks of the season. He is not to the level of Nick Foles, but Fitz would be the perfect replacement for a magical backup. So I do think that while I'm a fan of Nate Sudfeld, who they placed the second-round tender on, I think getting a veteran like Fitz would be a good move.
Okay, here's one from Jim Veal. With Bennett gone, is there any interest in bringing back Curry?
Yeah.
And the right price is part of a defensive end rotation.
And we kind of just talked about it. I think the only way they do that is if Chris Long is gone. I just don't think it's smart to have three of your four edge rushers be 30-plus years old. You got to find another young guy for Barnett eventually.
Okay. So this one's Tony Brewerton. This one's really, really interesting. If the cap was no object, and if you were Howie, who would you be going for in free agency and why? And I know this was a couple of days ago, but say all of the free agents were still free agents. And if you were Howie Roseman and you were trying to shape this team into the needs that you have, how would you go about it? And what kind of contracts would you offer the players that you're going for?
Le'Veon would have definitely been my first choice. And I think considering the market, again, Le'Veon was going to take the top deal, and I don't think Philadelphia was ever going to be that at $35 million guaranteed. But with the way the market shaped up, I would have been all in on Le'Veon Bell still in Philadelphia. I think, you know, even some people are saying that he lost. I just don't agree with that. It doesn't make the intention of what he was trying to do wrong. He got $2 million guaranteed more than what Pittsburgh offered. But at the same time, he did lose that 14 on the tag. But what if he was playing on the tag and he got injured? So,
and then he have to sign a prove-it deal.
Yeah, so, I don't know. And
He actually gained money by losing money. Because this is my philosophy. If you're on a tag where if you're getting paid $14 million for that 1 year, for Le'Veon Bell, it wasn't about the money. It was about security. And the Steelers, I believe, offered, 2 years with more money compared to what the Jets offered. But the Jets were offering the kind of guaranteed money throughout their contract that Le'Veon was looking for. Because, like you said, if he got hurt last year,
then he doesn't get any guaranteed money.
Then he gets nothing.
Right. And that's what it's all been about, is guaranteed money. And I don't think that, and people are kind of like, you know, gloating around like, see, he didn't get his money, should have been a team player. It's like, get out of here, man. If he had another leg injury last year.
Why do they always side with the owners and never the players?
I don't understand it. It didn't work to the way Le'Veon thought.
Right.
But it also doesn't mean like, oh, yep, see, this is why running backs don't get paid. Le'Veon Bell was not the guy that was going to change the market. A guy like Alvin Kamara is going to be the one that does that. Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott.
Like, Bell was already 27.
Yeah, and he's had a boatload of touches throughout his career. He hasn't played in a season, so Le'Veon wasn't going to be the guy. But yet, I'm into what he was trying to do, and he still got $2 million more guaranteed than what Pittsburgh might have given him. It wasn't even official. Some people think it wasn't even 33 fully guaranteed over only the first 2 years, whereas the Jets have kind of made it a more long-term contract where the Steelers
they spread it out the
right,
money
where the Steelers could have kicked him to the curb in 2 years. So. But it definitely would have been Le'Veon. I wasn't into paying any big-time linebackers like C.J. Mosley or any safeties. I think the Eagles are still in a great position there. I would have really been targeting Le'Veon and then maybe one of the younger pass rushers. I think Trey Flowers would have been a nice fit. If they could have traded for D. Ford like the Niners did, would have been into that too. And he got a massive extension there in San Francisco after the trade. So, if money was no object, one of those guys, for sure. I would say Le'Veon, one of the younger pass rushers that hit the open market. Like, if Frank Clark would have been available out of Seattle, I would have been all into that.
Then obviously DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, and then, of course, my boy DeSean. So Le'Veon Bell would have definitely been my first choice.
All right, so that completes our mailbag.
Perfect.
For the Lockdown Eagles podcast.
Oh, we got one more here from Greg in South Philly. Thoughts on the dopes in the NFC East.
Oh, that's a new one.
I saw this on our Facebook page. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we didn't even talk about Odell Beckham.
The Eagles have
four easy wins next year, Lars, between Washington and New York. Like,
now they just gotta beat Dallas.
Last year they justify not taking Sam Darnold at pick two because they're not rebuilding. They're in win now mode. That's why they took a running back instead of four really promising young rookie quarterbacks that were taken in the first round. And they keep Eli Manning and they pay Odell Beckham a ton of money. And then suddenly the next year, you decide you are rebuilding, but you're not getting rid of your 38-year-old carcass of a quarterback in Eli. But part of your rebuilding plan is getting rid of your young generational talent at receiver that's going to help your next rookie quarterback. And you're not even freeing up cap space. You're eating $16 million in dead space. Nothing that David Gettleman has done the past 2 years has made any sort of sense. I don't understand what the blueprint is. Maybe now you're finally giving up on it and you're tanking for Herbert from Oregon. But
I think it's not even the best quarterback out of his class.
But I don't even think that's the case of what the Giants are trying to do. I think it's because Odell was a quote-unquote distraction, which is nonsense. Inside the locker room, the Giants players love them, according to a lot of Giants beat writers that I follow. So it's a – man, the Giants are a mess. The Redskins are a mess.
I know he's a Giant. I feel for Saquon, though. That dude balls.
Yep.
That dude balls.
Poor guy's
going to have 70. He deserves better than
he's
that.
He's going to have 70 touches in a game. So that's brutal. But thank you all for contributing to the mailbag and chiming in your questions. Really enjoyed taking those. This has been a fun free agency special. We hope you enjoyed it. This will be a podcast that I think you could listen to today, the next couple days, because while free agency does open now in 5 minutes, there are, again, I don't think you're going to see a whirlwind of moves made outside of the official deals that we've heard about
from
Monday.
It's just going to be most of them contract signings.
Because, again, the tampering period opened Monday, and then yesterday just totally blew up. This volcano that it was, the NFL free agency yesterday, was unbelievable. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And we kind of got to take a back seat to it and relax. Like, we got Malik and Deshaun on Monday, and let's kind of enjoy the NFC East crumble to pieces and see all this different star power play on different teams in 2019. So
isn't Gregory
really
about to get suspended, too, from Dallas?
Yeah, and DeMarcus Lawrence isn't happy. I don't think he's going to have surgery until he gets a new deal.
But you got Jason Witten.
Who's the David Irving? David Irving quit. Yeah, that too. The NFC East has been brutal this year.
Oof.
David Irving quit football to smoke some marijuana.
That was wild. Dallas. Did you see that video?
I do get the painkillers addiction point, though, that he made. But still, that's another young
defensive. That's a pod for another day.
Yeah, right. That's a deeper discussion that I don't want to get into right now. But that's another young defensive lineman that Dallas lost. They could be losing three of their best pass rushers, and they're all young. Because of different factors. So, NFC least, not named Philadelphia. This has been the Lockdown Eagles podcast, the free agency special. Lars, thanks for coming on today.
You just hate to see it.
You hate to see it, Lars. You hate to see it. Hopefully the Eagles can get them. Let's see if they can get a running back. Maybe some depth at linebacker and
more
safety.
To come.
I think there's more to come. Malik Jackson, Deshaun Jackson aren't going to be it for this Eagles team. It's how we see some Lars. This has been the Lockdown Eagles podcast. Please follow our Twitter accounts at LockdownBirds, at DiBiaseLOE, Gino, at Gino_LOE, Lars, at LarsLewis12. Check out our written content as well, LockdownEagles.com. Please subscribe to the pod.
You ready?
And as always, thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening.
And let's go Birds!